Great breakup on that play by Thompson, who has the puck, scores again! Tage Thompson, that is full TNT mode in Dallas. He helped break up the play of the Sabres line, gets up ice, and the Sabres lead it 4-1 in Dallas.
One of the good roster decisions made by Team USA, Tage Thompson. Dan Dunleavy on the call there. The Sabres will look to make it 11 in a row today against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Sabres are on a tear. One may even say they're on a warpath. And they picked the worst year to do it, I think.
Why?
Well, the rest of the Atlantic Division is just as chaotic.
Yeah, but isn't that a good thing? Like, you're able to jump easier, all that? Like, it's not solidified? Like,
yes, but also, as Travis Yost will be able to confirm with me here, the Sabres are also 3 points back of last place in the Atlantic Division. Travis, good afternoon to you. It's good to talk with you again. It's Derek and Joe here on a Sports Talk Saturday. First of all, welcome back in. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Happy New Year. How you guys doing?
Oh, you know, we're hanging out here, Travis. And the last time we talked, you know, we keep getting into the chaotic ideas. And oddly enough, this is the second show that I've had to talk to you, though, about Jason Robertson.
That is quite the coincidence. It's just dawning on me that, yeah, the last time we talked about Robo. Yeah, he is certainly the topic of the week, is he not? I went on a bit of a rant yesterday. I think there's, when you talk about roster decisions, Team Canada, Team USA, even the Swedish and Finnish rosters, there's always debate at the margins. This is one, leaving Robertson off the USA lineup, I can't think of a recent comp in the last decade or so that seems crazier than this. And like, yeah, the core of the Team USA lineup is as talented as maybe as it's been in 20, 30 years, and they still should be able to compete with Canada for a gold medal and, you know, blah, blah, blah. The defense looks good. The goaltending looks fantastic. They have plenty of talent in the forward group, but you would be hard-pressed to find six players on this roster better than Jason Robertson, and Bill Guerin, they decided to leave him home.
It was quite the decision, Travis, and I think that it's one where I'm just as puzzled, just as upset, I would say, is probably the right word for it, because, you know, Tage Thompson being left off the Four Nations along with Robertson last year, it was already baffling enough. And then I'm like, okay, are they really going to do it again? Well, halfway they did. Tage Thompson, though, does make the roster. He is part of Team USA now, and I think they at least corrected one of the errors.
They did. Now, I think it's a bit of a two-sided coin, so I put a few thoughts into this. Number one, there's no doubt in my mind that Tage Thompson's size and positional versatility probably gave himself a little bit more of an advantage, to say nothing of, you know, his overall production the last few years and his clear offensive talent. I think those things are obvious. But the versatility and flexibility you definitely do want across the lineup, especially in a very tight, you know, round robin and advance type format like this. Your margin of error is pretty thin. So I thought bringing Thompson back into the fold made a ton of sense. He adds a dynamic that Team USA doesn't really necessarily have in spades. I mean, they've got, you know, Eichel is kind of that player, but he's also a different skill set. Matthews is kind of that player, but he's also a different skill set. But, you know, net on net, if you go down the forward group, I think there's like maybe five forwards that you, without hesitation, take over Robertson. Maybe you get to six before it's like, I'm not sure at this point. And that's the part that's puzzling to me. Something that I think is just out. This is the part where I disagree with Team USA, kind of getting into it a little bit more thoroughly. I appreciate the roster building component of this. Like, not everyone is going to be just a sniper, right? You've got to have a sum of the parts greater than the whole type setup. And that doesn't mean necessarily picking, you know, the 18 or the 20 best skaters and the three, or you should be picking the three best goalies, but it's not just a talent competition, right? There's fit and chemistry. And I do have time for that, but you know, over the last 5 years, Jason Robertson has scored all of 15 less goals than Connor McDavid in 5 years. That's the sort of scoring touch you think you would want across the Team USA team that, for as good as they looked at Four Nations, at the end of the day, they couldn't score when the going got tough. And I worry that they are, for as good as they are on the blue line, I think better than Canada. For as good as they are in net, I think they have clearly the best goaltending group in the entire competition. You know, Team Canada's forwards are an absolute Goliath, and you've got to have some degree of counterpunch and firepower within your offensive group. And depth guys like JT Miller and Vinny Trocheck, they're good players, but do they bring more to the table than a Robertson or a Thompson? In my opinion, it's not even debatable, but at least they got Tage back into the fold.
Travis Yost, TSN, joining us here on the Westher Hotline. Travis, you mentioned Canada, and I did like a lot of what they did. They were not scared to blink twice when a 19-year-old Macklin Celebrini is atop the top five in NHL scoring. They said, we don't care that you're 19. You're putting up production. You're on the team. I was also impressed with the switch of Sam Bennett for Tom Wilson. Wilson, for his reputation, he is putting points up. And again, as you mentioned, the oomph and the punch that they're able to put up on the scoreboard, they still even showed that by swapping out Bennett for Wilson.
Yeah, and even there, you know, even with the Team Canada roster, and I think, you know, kind of likening this to Robertson, I thought Robertson, that's like two levels above snub. I don't know what you call that. But, you know, the Canada, I think the margins were a little bit more debatable. Obviously, leaving Bennett at home, a bit controversial. I think there was a little controversy, too, with leaving Mark Scheifele at home, more of the veteran, you know, almost like the Team USA Brock Nelson edition of the Team Canada lineup. And, you know, Scheifele's still a really productive and talented player. But, you know, it goes to show you just how deep their forward group is over at Canada, where you can leave guys like Scheifele and Bennett at home and really not be worse for the wear. One other name that I thought, again, snub, debatable. Like, I think I have more time for the counter-argument here, but I was a little surprised they did leave Evan Bouchard at home. You know, Evan Bouchard is the classic, hey, I see that guy once or twice, you know, a week with one of the most terrific turnovers you'll see, and I think that's fair. But you're also talking about not just one of the most offensive gifted defensemen probably in the last 10 or 12 years or so. Certainly, you know, if he's not Cal Makar and, you know, and Quinn Hughes, he's maybe at, you know, a one cut below those guys. And you'd think, okay, Canada, where their talent skews very aggressively to the forward group, was it a bit surprising that Bouchard couldn't beat out a Travis Sanheim, for example, for a roster spot on the blue line? I think that was an interesting debate. I think it was likely closer than maybe Team Canada's even publicly let on. And again, I think there's an argument for, hey, look, we can't afford a higher risk, high reward type player when we know best on best, we may have the most talented roster, you know, speaking from Team Canada's perspective. So I think there's a little bit of nuance there that, okay, if Bouchard's not going to kill penalties and he's not my power play one quarterback like Makar is going to be, maybe there's not a perfect fit for him. But I, if nothing else, I thought he certainly earned it. And then again, Scheifele, Bennett, a couple other guys. I mean, Team Canada just goes very, very deep in the talent pool. You're always going to have some guys at the margins here.
Travis, focusing a little bit on the Sabres here, Derek mentioned in the last segment they're on a 10-game bender as of late, right? And
yeah,
everyone's kind of waiting for the hangover to inevitably come, especially, I mean, they're tied for their franchise record 10-game streak, and the last time it happened, they went on quite the slide afterwards. I do think this is a different team. But what's the national perspective or international perspective on the Sabres right now? Does everyone kind of think they're on a war path and they've kind of figured themselves out?
So as someone who gets like 25 things wrong a day, we were joking about this a month ago, but I was unlucky enough to have went to the Bills-Texans game in Houston, and I was on with, I think, Shope and Bulldog the following week, and they asked me, I'm paraphrasing this, but they asked me basically like, where are you at on the Bills and where are you at on the Sabres? And those are really two different comparisons with two very different goals, respectively, I think, from where they are organizationally. But I was both so concerned about the Bills roster, but also so encouraged by what I had seen from the Sabres on the ice this year, and this is before the winning streak, that coupled with a really, really weak Atlantic division that you guys were talking about at the top, I saw a real path for the Sabres. And yeah, let's be clear here. A lot of good luck and fortune to say something like that, and then here comes a 10-game win streak. But, you know, the reality of the Sabres for the last two and a half years, and we've talked about this, is They're a very competitive, even strength team. And the core limitation that this team has had over the past few years has really been in net. I mean, the goaltending has been an atrocity at different points, really through long stretches of the playoff drought. But even recently, as they've gotten more competitive at 5-on-5, it's been the goaltending that's really hindered them. And, you know, one of the diamond in the rough signings that I think, and he's dealing with a lower body injury right now, but Alex Lyon's been very solid for the Sabres. Luukkonen has started to bounce back a little bit in the past, I would say, month to 6 weeks or so. I think he's put together a few games during this 10-game win streak that have been much more encouraging than what we've seen previous. But all this to say, it looks like still the relatively high up-tempo team that can really score like a top 10, top 12 team at even strength that we've seen for the last 2-3 seasons. The difference is the Sabres are getting pretty good goaltending, and where it is notably outsized, and I mentioned this, I think, about a week ago, the key thing that's driving this winning streak, and it's a little, you know, you got to apportion different elements to each segment here, but one of the big tailwinds that they've had during this winning streak is the penalty kill has been absurd. I mean, you're talking about arguably the most productive penalty kill in terms of fewest goals conceded that you can find in the National Hockey League. And, you know, a testament to the defense in front, but the goaltending has really come around. One other thing I would add to this, too, and why I kind of agree with your point about, I don't think this is just going to evaporate. When we were doing every August, it's a great way for me to prep for the season, but it's also a great time to, you know, cover, get kind of getting back into hockey mode. Every August, I do a talent tiers. It's like a month long series of write ups over at TSN where I grade every single projected depth chart, wingers, centers, defensemen, goaltenders, and organizational structure. And one of the more controversial, I hear every argument under the sun from every fan base. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm horribly wrong. One of the common pushbacks I got when talking about the blue line was I thought both the Ottawa Senators and the Buffalo Sabres had two of the, I don't know, eight or nine best blue lines in the NHL. And I think maybe eight is being fairly liberal. I think it could be six, seven. And the argument I always made was don't mistake goaltending with defensive prowess, right? The Sabres, as well as the Senators, in my opinion, can go three quality pairings deep. And the question, I think more so in Buffalo than Ottawa at the time, because Linus Ullmark was coming off a good season last year, was if the Sabres can just get average goaltending, they've got a really talented blue line in front of them. They can make this work, you know, be an average team defensively, and they've got the personnel and talent to be above average offensively. And turns out that actually turned out to be a little bit more true in a good way for the Sabres than the Senators over in Ottawa, another division rival, and what another team that's helped kind of pave the path to this opportunity for Buffalo. Ottawa's goaltending has been a nightmare, arguably the worst in the league. Linus Ullmark's having a horrifying season. Their backup, Marilainen, has not been very good, whereas contrast that with Buffalo, they've gotten pretty solid play from both Lyon and Luukkonen, certainly over the past month to 6 weeks, one of the league's best penalty kills. And again, if you're bullish about where this team is offensively, you just really need them to be an average defensive and goaltending group to qualify for the playoffs, doubly so in the weaker conference and certainly the weakest of the four divisions. I think there's very good reason to remain bullish about the Sabres here and think that this could be the year that they actually snap the playoff drought.
Travis Yost, TSN, joining us here on the Western Hotline. Travis, it is kind of interesting that, you know, we're bullish on the Sabres. Everything's looking good for them. And yet, this is also a team that fired their general manager midway through this winning streak. Or not midway, but at the beginning of their winning streak here. But yep. I'm also balancing my point on this with Kevin Adams. I think that he will get the rightful credit that he deserves for putting a roster together, but also I do find it that it was a guy that also did end up with multiple reasons to be ultimately let go, and it's the pass and the inaction from him that ultimately leads to him not being able to really savor in what the Sabres are doing right now.
Yeah, I think it's well said. And, you know, going back, ironically, bringing up Ottawa 5 minutes ago, I think you could have made the similar points about Pierre Dorion and even Eugene Melnyk in many years past. You know, they've built a talented roster that, you know, after a near decade-long painful rebuild where there was plenty of criticism about why is this taking so long? Why can they not pull out of the depths? You know, they finally snapped their playoff drought last year. And bringing this back to the Sabres here, I think it's fair to say, look at this lineup, look at this roster. There is a lot of not just good veteran talent, guys like Thompson and Tuck, but there's a lot of good young talent that has now developed into NHL caliber top six, top nine forwards, and top four defensive players. And you have to give credit to someone, as crazy as it sounds, because you just fired him. Adams deserves a little bit of that credit, but I think there's two compelling counterarguments as to why he doesn't deserve all that much and why he's, you know, effectively unemployed as the team, you know, surges here through the standings. The first is, I think there's a very good argument, going back to the goaltending discussion, that the Sabres drought should have ended two-ish years ago. The goaltending position, for as much as they did at the skater level, this has been a tire fire for years in the Buffalo organization. And, you know, we talk a lot in NHL circles about, you know, good coaches, bad coaches, and average coaches all alike have gotten fired for goaltending capitulation and goaltending failures. GM's a little bit less so, but I think Adams uniquely or disproportionately has to kind of wear the heavy crown of, I never figured out the goaltending situation. And even right now, you know, you can, let's say you're hopeful about what Lyon and what this is. I would say the triumvirate of Buffalo goaltenders have done this year. Is this a long-term stable group that you can bet on over the next 3 or 4 years? Of course not. Half these guys need contracts, right? So the goaltending position is still a question mark for the Sabres organization. I think Adams wears that. The other piece too is, like, I think there were several moves that Adams made or didn't make over his tenure that stuck with ownership. And when you look around the league, how many points do you really get for building a talented young roster when you have so many bites at the apple, where you're always picking high in the draft, you're always trading, you're always a seller at the trade deadline, securing more picks, more prospects? Innately, that's the whole point of the hard salary cap in draft and develop league, is, like, it's very hard to be bad forever. And quite frankly, that's why Adams, I think, still wears that reputation, or that component of it, which is the Sabres still have not snapped this playoff drought. And despite what we may like around this roster, until they actually cross that playoff threshold and play in a game 83, that's effectively what he's going to be remembered for in Buffalo.
And I think, Travis, further to that point, though, of, like, business is not finished, no matter what we like about them. I do think that the Atlantic Division has been weird enough, but furthermore, they dug themselves out of one heck of a hole when it comes to it, because they've won 10 straight,
yep,
and they've only gotten themselves to fourth in the division. Typically, with a win streak like that, you tend to rocket yourself into a different stratosphere, and the Sabres still have yet to do that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think a lot of that speaks to the hole they did dig themselves out of. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, some of that was, the Sabres did not have exactly a great run of injury luck. You had the Norris injuries, Dahlin missed time. You know, there were guys in and out of the lineup fairly regularly through October and November, but the Sabres are pretty healthy right now. And the other thing I would say, and why I'd be optimistic about where the Sabres are, if you look at the Atlantic Division, they are clearly the second best team by goal differential in the Atlantic. And yeah, they are 7 goals better than the current division leading Detroit Red Wings. The only team that has actually outperformed in the Atlantic all year are the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they're 28 or 29 goals better than the opposition on the year. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is on the treadmill of mediocrity. And yeah, eye of the beholder, right? Are the Sabres the team that was dreadful for the first 6 weeks? I don't think so. Are the Sabres the team that can win every single night, all night, every night? You know, but no, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. But again, this is the weakest of the four divisions. And you're talking about a Sabres team here that is about to cross the halfway point of the regular season. And if I told you, hey guys, WGR team, in the second week of January, at the halfway point of the regular season, the Buffalo Sabres are going to have a better goal differential than the Edmonton Oilers, Vegas Golden Knights, and Toronto Maple Leafs, what would you have said? And yet that's unequivocally where they're at right now. So I think there are more reasons than not to be optimistic for the first time in a long time about this team. And while, yeah, maybe there's some good, you know, sentiment around, okay, we finally overhauled the front office. It was a long-term change. It was long overdue. We needed to make that change. I think that's more on the periphery. This is more about, this is a relatively talented roster, and so long, million-dollar question, so long as the goaltending holds up, there is really no reason for, within this division, the Sabres cannot finish inside of the top three. I still feel that to this day.
Travis, before we wrap things up here, just a quick question. You mentioned you went to the Bills-Houston game, unfortunately. But the final game at Highmark Stadium, final regular season game, could be the final game, depending on how playoff seeding plays out, is coming up this weekend. Do you, if you've been to the stadium, do you have any memory that sticks out to you, or were you able to make it out here at all?
Oh, yeah. I've been to a bunch of games at Highmark. Last game I went to, actually, I've been to a few in the last couple of years, but the last Bills home game I went to actually was probably one of the best memories I had, because it was the most picturesque. I think it was week two or week four last season when they played Miami, and the Dolphins were not a joke yet at this time. They still had a pretty reputable offense. And yeah, it was like a classic, like ho-hum, like the Bills scored 40 on the Dolphins. And, you know, it was just a scoring affair of the highest order, Allen going up and down the field. But all I remember about the game, I've been to some just rough, rough winter, nasty weather, cold rain games, snow games, you know, and those are incredible for different reasons once you get into the environment and with the fans. But this was like the most picturesque 72-degree, the absolute sublime part of Buffalo fall weather, coupled with the Bills going up and down the field all over the Dolphins. Went up there with my buddy, who is, you know, I'm from Long Island, he's out from Long Island, and I almost that day, the Bills were so good, so entertaining, and the city so out for the Bills that week, that random week four game or whatever it was, I damn near converted him to become a Bills fan overnight. So I that's one of my, you know, lasting memories that I'm going to go out with, and very, very strong goal. I did not get to get up to the home game this year, but very strong goal is to see the new stadium next year under those beautiful seats, so I don't have to shovel snow out of my seat. So I'm excited for that, boys.
Yeah, there have been people do that this weekend. So.
One last ride.
Yeah.
Travis, always appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on here again with us. And the next time we talk, maybe it won't center around Jason Robertson.
Yeah, let's hope not. Unless he traded at the deadline.
Actually, yes, let's hope actually we are talking about Jason Robertson, maybe to Buffalo. I'm back to my dreams.
Sabres acquire him at the deadline on his expiring deal. Wouldn't be the craziest thing, huh?
I would be doing backflips, Travis. I may fail at doing them, but I might be doing them at that point. But take care, and we'll talk soon, man.
Take care, guys.
That's Travis Yost of TSN on the Western Hotline. Sabres looking to make it 11 in a row. We talked some Olympic rosters as well. A little bit of Bills memories sprinkled in there for Highmark Stadium as well. And that's where we'll end up turning it all to you. Coming up here, 803-0550 is the number to call. If you've got anything on the Sabres, you've got anything on Highmark Stadium, now's the time to get connected with our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll end the segment taking Paul in Buffalo. Paul, welcome to Sports Talk Saturday.
Hey, guys. I guess I'll start real quick with my stadium memory, which, of course, is going to be the NHL Winter Classic.
Mm-hmm.
The older I get, the more I appreciate Sidney Crosby. If you want to tell me he's the greatest hockey player who ever lived, I really can't argue it. There's a couple guys, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, obviously. But if you had to build a perfect hockey player in a laboratory, you're coming out with Sidney Crosby every single time. There is no flaw to his game. There has been no flaw to his game in 20 years, and it's a privilege to watch him. But, of course, he broke my heart at the Winter Classic, because
right. That's
what he does.
That's what he does. He did it in the Olympics, too. You know, no big deal. Maybe he'll do it again.
God. He has broken Sabre fans' heart of this generation. I mean, he beat Ryan Miller like a drum Ryan Miller's entire career. That period stop. Mm-hmm. Sidney Crosby owned him, whether it was on Team USA or for the Buffalo Sabres. But moving on to the freight train going down the tracks that are the Buffalo Sabres, the game against the Dallas Stars was the most tenacious forecheck I have seen from Buffalo Sabre forwards in 15 years. After that game, I stood up and said, this is Buffalo Sabre hockey. This team has an identity. They forecheck like dogs. Peyton Krebs got that dog in him. Jordan Greenway got that dog in him. Dunn and Doan got that dog in him. And the biggest dog of them all, Tage Thompson, who, if you get in his way, he'll beat you up. He will go behind your net, own the puck because he's too big for you to get it off him, and just put a sweet old sauce on his line mate's stick. he will fire a shot that maybe him, David Pastrnak, and Leon Draisaitl can fire in all the world and beat your goalie like a fool. He will just own the puck and rush the net and create rebounds. That's a guy with dog in him. Our captain's got dog in him. Matias Samuelson's got that dog in him again. This team is a lunch pail group. It's a bunch of dogs, and they're going to eat some little puppies in Columbus up this afternoon. Boys, let's go. I'm looking for a 5-1 win today. Have a great show.
Paul, thanks. And I will say, you forgot the biggest dog of them all. Zach Benson.
Yeah.
Zach Benson is the certified dog.
Yep. Certified dog. Don't condone cannibalism, though. Don't eat puppies.
Don't eat puppies. Maybe some dog chow. Dog chow. Let's go with that. How's that? They'll come up and eat some puppy chow today. How's that?
Yeah.
There we go. 803-0550 is the number to call. If you want to talk anything, memories of Highmark Stadium, as this is probably the last chance that we're going to see football in that building, let it out. Because it's always good to let the memories go on here. We've had a fun with that back on Wednesday, back on Friday. We'll keep doing that here throughout the rest of the weekend before the Bills take on the Jets. So we'll shift a little bit to football coming up here on Sports Talk Saturday.
Showing that the first two games were not on the flukish side. They've come back against the Patriots. Tom Brady on first down has it deflected and picked off. Intercepted by Florence. Florence is in for the touchdown.
Wow. Hearing the crowd on that one.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. That game in 2011, they had not beaten the Patriots since 2003, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
1,500 days, 15 regular season matchups. Wow. Ownership. Unbelievable to think about there. But that was the crowd pop because they were like actually going to win that game.
Right.
So it was pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. I was... Ooh, man. So you're telling me I was born in 02.
No, nope, okay. Here we go.
I was born in 02. They won in 03.
I don't want to hear this.
You're telling me I was 9 years old before they beat the Patriots again after being one. That's absolutely insane. That's insane. That's unbelievable. That's crazy.
You can keep talking. I'm dead inside.
Come on. You got to admit, that's insane.
And probably on the outside. I need a cane.
I don't know. I
every time you do this.
See, I don't know. I don't think people will agree with me, but I never, as a kid, saw the Patriots as a quote-unquote rivalry because that's what I experienced, not winning a single game. And then the closest you get to really getting excited when Tyrod Taylor's around is when Brady's suspended and they go into New England and win 16-0.
It was only 16-0.
Yeah. I don't know. Highmark memories, man. That's one of them. 2011. I remember that game.
I'm pretty sure also Garoppolo was supposed to start for them there. And it was in that game. And he got injured too.
Yeah.
And Jacoby Brissett had to play.
Yes.
But yes. Highmark Stadium memories. 803-0550 is the number to call. You could talk about anything else, though, too. Sabres on warpath. They have won 10 straight, looking to set the franchise record today against Columbus. We'll talk with Brian Koziel as well. As our guests were very hockey-heavy today, but we're asking the same question today as we're asking all of you, which is some of your favorite memories from Highmark Stadium. Zach and I did this back on Wednesday on the Extra Point Show. The morning show did it yesterday as well, a little bit more in full and in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to recount mine of... The first thing I think of is one of those games.
Oh, no.
Like you mentioned the drought.
Yeah. Is it one of those?
It's one of those.
Gee. Well, that's a big part of the history.
But that's a big part of the history. I think it has to do more with it's the people you go with, not necessarily the product on the field.
Right. Right.
And for me, or it's like the circumstances that happen around it. It was this, I don't have the year pinned down. Kind of like how, you know, we just talked with Travis, the same thing. But the first thing he thought of was, I almost converted my buddy to a Bills fandom right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing he remembers the most. It was a game against the Dallas Cowboys at home, which is already infrequent as it is. No, it's not that one.
Okay.
It is a game in December where teams are eliminated. I do believe Rex Ryan is the coach at this point. I'm going to need to look this up now because I
what
have a
year
chance
was it?
To. I don't remember the year.
Okay.
It was against the Cowboys. That is what I do remember. I do remember that Kellen Moore was the starting quarterback.
Okay.
Those are what you have to work with. Okay. And I'm going in and I'm going to try to find it too. But it's a game in December and it's not very pretty. Okay, hang on. I think I might have found it.
Okay.
I think I might have found it. It was 2015. December 27th of 2015. Rex Ryan is about to complete his first year with the Bills. And the Bills win a game in the snow 16-6.
Oh,
against the Dallas Cowboys starting Kellen Moore at quarterback.
That's something. That's something.
For your stat lines out there, Kellen Moore and Tyrod Taylor had similar stat lines, actually. Each of them completing 13 passes. Taylor only threw 18, though.
Mm-hmm.
Moore threw 31.
Jeez.
Yes. 186 yards to Taylor's 179. They both throw no touchdowns, one interception.
Mm-hmm.
It is the run game that gets it done here as the Bills deploy a three-headed attack compared to the Cowboys with Darren McFadden.
Darren McFadden's a pull.
Yes. 19 carries, 99 yards. But again, Dallas doesn't score a touchdown in this game. Mike Gillisley does on his 9 carries for 93 yards. But Carlos Williams, there's another name pull, 76 yards on the ground. Taylor with 67 yards rushing. It was a great day.
Mm-hmm.
The product on the field did not matter at all.
No, not in the slightest.
What I do remember is that my cousin and I were going to this game, and we were just like, who cares? Tickets are like $12 on the secondary market right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care necessarily about the game that's about to be played. It's going to be cold. We're going to have to bundle up. But it was one of those games, yeah. The ones that you think, if seats weren't purchased, because like you heard of the days of like Russell would buy tickets to make sure it wasn't a blackout.
Yeah, right.
It was one
right.
of those games.
It was one of those. Yeah,
it was a week 16. Everybody, both teams are dead in the water.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that the game before, Rex Ryan punted on the season because he gave the ball back to Miami in overtime when they needed a win, not a tie.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that the year after? I don't remember.
It was something like that.
I think it was the year after. Either way. The drought can cloud memories of the actual product on the field, but there were two things that I remember. It was the Dallas Cowboys, and it was Kellen Moore. That's the only thing I cared about on the field.
Mm-hmm.
It was the game after Christmas. I went with my cousin. He lives in Germany now, so I cherish the memories that I have hanging out with him because I don't get to do that anymore.
Yeah, right.
That's the first one I went to. One of those games.
Yeah.
And I know that plenty of people have gone to enough games to where you've probably been there for better memories and better football games, I should say. But as someone that does not get to go to games very often, my day is typically 12 hours here at the station. And I don't get to go to the stadium for these.
No. I mean, we're all in the same boat.
We are in the same boat.
Yeah. I got to say, there's one memory that really sticks out to me. And I have a couple. Do we dip into the bad ones? Because there's a couple doozies.
I just dipped into an interesting one.
So I was in seventh grade. So I was 12. Mario Williams had been recently added to the team. He was my first Bills jersey.
It was the coolest thing.
He was my favorite player. He's what helped get me really into watching football because I could associate with a player like that. And we did a fuel up to play 60. Remember when that initiative started?
Yes.
So our middle school, our health class, we did it, and we put together a breakfast cart and like won a little competition thing, and we were able to go and be with the team, right? So we went to practice with CJ Spiller and Billy the Buffalo.
Right.
So it was cool little initiative stuff like that. But on the day of, we got to run out of the tunnel with the team, and there's
me. Is that
me.
A little Joe Kelly?
That's a little me. Yeah, not for the radio listeners, but I get to high-five Mario Williams
Come
as he
on,
flies
gotta
out of the tunnel.
Come on, you got to put that out there.
I know. I might. I'm going to have to take a screenshot. I'll put
Do
it on Twitter for anyone who didn't
Do
see
it.
But yes, so that's my high mark memory, watching my idol at the time on the Bills, Mario Williams, run straight at me out of the tunnel after we jogged out with like the majority of the team.
Yep.
And then like they introduced
the starting
starters.
Lineups, yep.
Yeah. So we got to do that. That's probably my my top Highmark memory. And of course, I've been to good games, like the Tyler Bass in December against Miami, the snow game, all the snowball game, all that stuff. I've been around. Right. I love it, but that is like
that's a core.
I've
memory.
Never been able to do anything like that since. You know,
I just for those that obviously like, I got to see Joe Kelly.
Yes, you did. I'm taking the screenshot right now. It's going to be blurry because it's on a camera from like 2011. But you know,
but that's awesome. 803-0550. We're getting into some of ours, and we're cutting deep with our
deep
with our stadium memories here. We'd like to hear more of yours, including going to hear to Rich. Rich, welcome into Sports Talk Saturday. What you got?
Good morning, boys. My best memory of going to Rich was with my two nephews back in the late 80s. They played for Iroquois. And they went there back-to-back years. Nice. Unfortunately, they played against Orchard Park both those years. And Orchard Park at that time is probably the best football high school football team ever to come out of Buffalo. They had Wolfley, and they had Larry Fole, Lex Luger, and Ron Pitts on that team. They lost both times, but it was one hell of an experience.
Rich, thank you. Appreciate the call. And I love hearing about the different experiences, the different type of games. It's not just Bills games, the memories of the stadium. It is also the kids that got to play in those stadiums and the families that got to support the kids that played in the stadium. Those are unique experiences that not everyone gets to say that they had. Yeah, it's the same building, but you got to do something different. Paul mentioned the Winter Classic and covering that. The other one that I remember the most is the World Junior game. Between U.S. and Canada there, me buying a jersey out of spite, and Howard Simon chasing me down the hall the day after. But
I remember you telling me about
But that jersey also was a great way to be everyone's friend that day. That was the other part. I went with my buddy Ben, and we were just ecstatic to be there. I was here for the morning show to do SCAF, Super Great American Football Frenzy, with Howard.
Okay.
Jeremy was off. I was going to go to the game, but real quick, I was requested by Howard, hey, you know, you want to come in and do SCAF? Yeah, absolutely. So I come in, do SCAF, get laughed at. Howard says this is Derek's last day because he likes the Bills-themed Team USA jersey, and I'm just getting picked on. Roasted. But that jersey, I was everyone's friend. Why? Austin Matthews. So Canadian fans liked it. Team USA fans liked it because it was a Team USA jersey. Bills fans liked it because it was a Bills-looking jersey. I was everybody's friend at the stadium that day. And then I come back here, and Howard sees I got an Austin Matthews jersey, and I had to run for the hills.
Yeah, you had to run out of here. Get out. Get out.
It was a good time, though, because it was one of those picturesque days. Travis mentioned of like how fall and it can really look incredible. I got to experience it with winter, where it was not windy. It was just snowfall.
Yeah.
No wind. It wasn't pushing in your face like how it will irritatedly do, especially this past week, if everyone knows what I'm talking about.
That's how that Bills-Dolphins game was, where they were in the reds and Bass hits the game winner. It was like almost confetti coming down.
Yes.
Like it was so cool. Yeah.
It's picturesque. It's a snow globe.
Yeah.
Really, it is. And that's where you're like, okay, yeah, no, I could absolutely live here with this. Just don't let the wind mess everything up. And that's why the weather always ends up worse. But that's probably one of mine that, again, they're few. And the last Bills game that I went to was the Minnesota Vikings game that was on drugs.
That'll do it.
And that was the first time I'd been to a Bills game in like over 9 years. I got that game. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah.
803-0550 is the number to call. Enough about our memories. Let's talk about yours. Dennis in North Tonawanda, what you got for us?
Hey, guys. Favorite moment was a New England game back when Grady was crushing us on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody in our section must have sold their tickets because there was just a spattering of Bills fans there. And we were getting beat like usual. And they were just being real jerks, the New England fans, and taunting us the whole time. And my wife stood up, like, you know how your wife yells at the kids and you leave the room because you're scared? And she screamed at probably six rows, screamed at them, and you sit down, you shut up and turn around. And the whole section sat down and didn't get up for the rest of the game. Guys were coming down going, shaking her hand like I've never seen anything like that before. You just shut up a whole section. And it was funny. It was just to see them all just turn around and sit down, and that was it. They were done. They weren't even cheering anymore. Never seen anything like it, but it was fun.
That's awesome, Dennis. All right. Thanks for the Take call. Care, appreciate man. It.
All right.
So, that's awesome. That's like, awesome.
That's my wife right there. Let's go. Like that's what that's my reaction if that happens. Like, that's my wife. Let's go. She got all of those New England fans to shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
And we're going to have to get back to that pretty soon, it sounds like.
So. The shutting up of New England
yes,
fans.
Yes, yes.
Yes, I would agree with you there. And we'll talk about that more coming up in the next segment, or in the next hour, I should say. But real quick, we'll take one more call before we end the segment here. We'll go to Jack. Jack, what you got for us here? Welcome to Sports Talk Saturday.
Hello, guys. Me and my dad are driving to Columbus for our first Sabres game.
Nice!
We wanted to say our school predictions. We think it's going to be 3-1 Sabres. Let's go Sabres.
Let's go Sabres.
Let's go
and
Sabres.
Jack, thanks for the call. And enjoy the game up there in Columbus. And drive safe.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Jack. Really like that. Hey, I do think that I like the chances against Columbus today.
I do too.
I'm not going to make a prediction though because we know my track record.
Yeah, do
so
not.
I'm not going to do
it. Do not
let
I'm Jack's
not
prediction
stand. Yeah, I'm
going to
let Jack's prediction be
you
there.
You not make the prediction.
I'll shut up.
Steer clear.
803-0550 is the number to call. We'll take a timeout here. Come back here. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley here with you. Thanks for being with us on another Sports Talk Saturday.
Zach Moss, the tailback, the snap. Josh keeps it out, play action, fires to the end zone. You called it, Eric. Touchdown, Buffalo. The pass to rookie Tommy Doyle, the big man, touchdown. Touchdown, Bills. They are pouring it on now.
Tommy Doyle.
Is that that game? The perfect game. Yes, it is.
Oh.
John Murphy on that call there. But during the break, we did some crunching.
We did. We crunched a lot of numbers.
We did. And Joe... We found out the game that you were talking about when little, smaller Joe Calley is on the field. He's getting a high five from Mario Williams. We found out something.
Mm-hmm.
That 7 degrees of separation sort of thing. You were on the same field that Matt Bove was when Aaron Rodgers pushes him out of the way.
Yes.
A date that is now known in infamy.
Yeah. And, yeah, the Bills played the Packers. Now, like, remembering this and hearing this, I do remember this.
I am so thrilled to know that this was that game because you found out what year the picture was taken. It was 2014.
2014.
And I look at it, I'm like, you guys are kind of bundled up.
December of 2014.
And you go, yeah, it was December. And I was looking at the schedule, the 2014 Buffalo Bills schedule, and the only game in December at home in 2014 is the Green Bay Packers where Rodgers gets picked off twice by Bakari Rambo.
Mm-hmm.
and Matt Bove eventually gets shuffled out of the way by Aaron Rodgers because he lost.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That is uncanny. The Bills would then get themselves eliminated from playoff contention by losing to the Raiders. Good job, guys. 1 week later. But that's incredible. That is wild.
Mm-hmm. Wild how things happen like that. It's crazy. I haven't
you
revisited
and Matt Bove
that.
Are connected in history.
I haven't revisited that mentally in a long time until really we started doing this. And yeah, they decked us out in adult size gear, so I still have everything they gave me from that day.
That is amazing.
Yeah,
that cool. is.
And Mario Williams had a hell of a game, so I couldn't have been happier back then. I've been confusing that day with the Browns game I went to the next year. With my dad, and that was just abysmal on all fronts. So, not great. Not great.
Well, there we go. 803-0550 is the number to call. We dug through and got down to the dates of Joe Calley's Bills memories. Let's hear more of yours here on the other side on Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley here with you for another hour before Sabres pregame starts at 2 o'clock here on WGR.